This has in turn resulted in his finding other ways through which this process can be promoted. The most fundamental or comprehensive of these is precisely boiling. In the boiling of products, what happens is that the A life units are killed, and only the B life units are left behind, since these are to a great extent unaffected by boiling. So when people today cook their food, it is to free their organisms from undertaking this process of killing. This process of liberation therefore means relief for the organism. The human being feels that he has not nearly as much difficulty in digesting the cooked products as he has in digesting the raw ones. He has realized that boiling makes the products tender. This tender state is due only to the fact that the alive units are already killed before they are eaten or assimilated as food in the organism. But this does not alter the fact that they are all the same corpses that are eaten, and that the life units that are not living and therefore constitute the true nourishment for the organism can, as previously mentioned, be released or liberated only through the putrefaction or decomposition of these corpses. As this process of putrefaction, in addition to liberating the B life units, just like all other processes of putrefaction, is a combination of all the substances that are destructive and damaging to the organism, such a permanent state cannot in the long run be free from damaging effects on the advanced organism. The goal of evolution is therefore, among other things, to lead individuals forward to a state in which they can more and more assimilate the B life units directly and not indirectly through a prior process of putrefaction or decomposition of corpses, through which the organism at the same time, to a corresponding degree, must permanently be a well of poison, a sewer or a residence for all materials, substances or vibrations lethal, detrimental or damaging to life. Chapter 25 A temporary perfect food for the true godlike human being. The goal of evolution is therefore, as previously mentioned, the guiding of people away from such a primitive existence where a very great percentage of their digestion is a process of putrefaction, and where the organism must extract the living life units necessary for its maintenance from decayed or decomposed corpses. It is not the intention that the organism should continue being a rubbish dump for all the sources of organic illness. Evolution will thus lead people to a state where their organisms are transformed so as to be able to assimilate nutritional life units directly from nature, which means assimilating only such B life units as are encapsulated in substances that must first be decayed or decomposed for their liberation to take place. Life units that are liberated by nature and wait only for their assimilation as nourishment in an organism in order that their further development can be promoted normally. Do such life units exist? Yes, I have already pointed out the vegetarian source of nutrition as the way towards the above-mentioned state. Within the vegetarian source of nutrition there are precisely such life units, which are only very lightly or thinly encapsulated and whose liberation is therefore not dependent on any prior process of putrefaction or decomposition through digestion. Such life units are present in many different kinds of fruit flesh. Fruit flesh should here be understood as the flesh around the kernel. In the edible fruits, this flesh consists almost exclusively of life units that are transferred directly to the organism, and for which assimilation as nourishment in this organism is therefore a natural development. As no special prior release of energy for killing, no prior process of putrefaction is needed here, and as the organism is hereby to a corresponding degree freed from being a dustbin for all kinds of useless remains of corpses, it will of necessity become finer and finer. So the highest food here on earth is pure fruit flesh, but of course from only the absolutely fully ripe edible fruits. In unripe fruit the life units are still not mature enough to be assimilated into the organism as nourishment. The fruits that at present can be termed true human food include apples, pears, plums, grapes, bananas, melons, edible berries and many other fruits that have flesh around the kernel. As the life units in these fruits are almost exclusively B life units, which, as we have seen, reach the organism directly and therefore do not need any prior process of killing, the boiling of these will be absolutely meaningless and useless. indeed even damaging, since one thereby lowers the level of health of the life units. The fruits mentioned constitute therefore the absolutely perfect and really true raw food. They belong to existence's most elevated dishes since they, unlike all other forms of a source of nutrition, are not based on the release of the killing principle but are produced by life's highest food expert, life itself, in accordance with the most perfect chemical laws. It is life's own serving of the daily bread for those beings who have to fulfill love's great commandment, or for the terrestrial human being when he one day, born anew of water and the Spirit, will be a manifestation of the true God-like human being. Chapter 26. The present and the future. As the fully ripe fruit flesh constitutes the future absolutely right human food, or the food that will prevent all nutritional diseases and make the human organism's state of vibration such that it can unhindered vibrate in contact with the Holy Spirit, which means that the organism's brain and nervous system can vibrate unhindered in the highest and finest thought materials, the individual thereby becoming enriched with the highest wisdom. Evolution will gradually guide all the energy people now use on animal nutrition over to vegetarian nutrition. This will in turn mean that in the coming world order, instead of the present great slaughterhouses and cattle breeding establishments, one will find huge concerns whose function will be to promote the improvement of plants and the evolution of edible fruit flesh. This will in turn lead to the gradual development of fruits of simply fantastic dimensions compared with today's known species. Evolution will therefore lead to today's agriculture becoming horticulture. The waving cornfields will become flourishing orchards. As this form of nutrition will not require nearly as much space as the present form, the surplus land will be converted into large public parks. From magnificent groves with great lawns, fountains, flowerbeds, canals, arched bridges, works of art on exhibition, pavilions and so on, one will look back at the barbarism of the past. One will read with horror about man's eating of corpses, about how the human being's love for animals on a large scale was merely a cannibal's love of meat. In wonderful museums, great axes, sheath knives, butcher's knives, sporting guns, fish hooks and other instruments of murder will speak their silent language to people of the future about the primitive mentality of the past. In a disease-free existence, one will, in historical works, read with a shudder of disgust about the sick mankind of today, its tuberculosis, cancer, kidney troubles, gallstones, arteriosclerosis, organic heart disease, digestive troubles, nervousness and so on. And in truth have the words of Jesus confirmed, that his kingdom was not of this world. Chapter 27. The ideal food for the human being of today. I have with this hinted at the course of evolution towards the real human food. As the terrestrial human being in evolution has not reached so far as to constitute a real or finished human being, but to a certain degree still belongs to the zone of the killing principle, the real human food cannot be said to constitute entirely the ideal food for the same being. This means that his organism is not yet so advanced in evolution that it is completely adapted to pure fruit flesh. While the vibrations of the organisms mentioned are really too weak to process the animal food, they are still too strong to deal with fruit flesh alone. So the ideal food for the human being of today will, in addition to a certain quantity of fruit flesh, be something between animal flesh and fruit flesh. It is therefore important here not to get the idea that the being in question can live exclusively on fruit flesh. The present organism of the terrestrial human being is as yet, even if it really has grown away from nutrition based on animal flesh, all the same according to the power of habit equipped to a certain extent to be a residence for the process of decomposition and the passage of the remains of corpses. Its entire digestive system, its stomach and intestines, is still based on the transport of a certain quantity of waste and absolutely only a natural evolution, which means a slow habituation over hundreds of years, will be able to change people's digestive organs so as to be 100% adapted to pure fruit flesh. A sudden transition to living entirely on fruit flesh would be such an assault, such a breach of the laws of nature that its consequences border on the destruction of the organism. Such refined food belongs to the real human being or the finished godlike human being in the same way as universal love is the innate main characteristic of the same being. So the terrestrial human being must, in accordance with the nature of his organism, still eat impure food or extract its nutritional life units through a process of killing and the decomposition of corpses. But this does not, of course, alter the fact that his evolution carries with it another fact, that he, to an increasing degree, must seek his nourishment among such products as will less and less require the ghastly process described above, and that he is thus, in the area of nutrition, also on his way towards his temporary goal and highest ideal, the consummate godlike human being. Chapter 28: The connecting link between meat and fruit nourishment as we now know. The ideal food for the present terrestrial civilized human being is absolutely not animal foodstuffs, but is to be found among the vegetarian foods. Of these, the edible fruit flesh is the purest and noblest, but as it lies too high for the above-mentioned being, so that it cannot yet constitute 100% of his nutrition, he must also look to other vegetarian products to replace the missing percentage. These products can be divided into three categories, namely grain products, root products, and leaf products. To the first category belong such products as are made from the kernels of plants, grains and nuts, such as bread, flour, meal, nut meat, together with the various meat-free bean dishes, pea soups and so on. To the second category belong such products as are made from the roots of plants, which means dishes that are made from potatoes, carrots, parsnips, beetroots, celery or other edible roots. The third category includes all dishes that are made from leaves and stalks, for example salads, vegetable dishes, the various forms of meat-free cabbage dishes and the like. Individuals who want to leave animal nourishment will thus be referred to seek their nourishment among the above-mentioned products or dishes, which constitute the great connecting link between meat and fruit nourishment. To lay down what he should eat or preferably choose from these foods is not possible, for this can in the main be decided only by the individual himself. As the great majority of the people on the earth are unhealthy and are therefore to be regarded only as patients, it will be very individual what the various beings will be able to tolerate. What can be tolerated by one is very often very bad for another. Furthermore, the mental attitude has a fundamental significance. The organism of the profoundly spiritually enlightened and loving being will in many cases be able to digest the strong, coarse root products only with great difficulty, just as the same can also sometimes be true of the coarse nut or kernel products. Such an organism will therefore be able to tolerate only the more mild and refined sorts. It can therefore be recommended only that the beginner vegetarian carefully tries out and monitors the effects of this or that food made from vegetarian products in order to ascertain what for him or her is particularly appropriate or suitable. Every individual must carefully keep to the foods that cause him no inconvenience and whose digestion he, so to speak, does not notice. Here some will perhaps say that they can digest animal foods very well. But to this I must answer that it is really only a question of time how long they will have this ability, since it is due exclusively to the power of habit through inherited traditions. The loss of the energy that the individuals in question must supply when assimilating the animal nourishment in their organisms will sooner or later result in a reaction in the form of one organic illness or another. Kernel, root and leaf products contain to a certain degree, like the animal products, a series of A life units, the nature of which is not, as previously mentioned, to be assimilated as nourishment in an organism. During the assimilation in the organism of the products mentioned, there will therefore also be a certain resistance to overcome, since the organisms of the said life units must first be killed and decomposed before the B life units within them can be liberated and transferred alive to the organism as nourishment. As the A life units in the plant substances are not nearly as numerous and not nearly as far advanced as the A life units in the animal products, The smell of their process of decomposition or putrefaction is not nearly as pungent and penetrating as in the decomposition of animal products. This in turn means that the excrement is not nearly so stinking or poisonous after the eating of vegetarian products as it is after animal products. The killing principle is therefore far less extensive in vegetarian nourishment than in animal. It is not such a great violation of the fifth commandment as that, and is therefore to be considered to belong to a higher layer of consciousness. Chapter 29 Boiling of the coarse or least digestible vegetarian products is retained as the vegetarian products mentioned here contain A life units that have to be killed before the B life units can be released. People, as they become more developed and their organisms become more refined and less suitable for carrying out this process of killing, have gone over to using boiling as the means of killing. What is left for the organism is only to carry out the process of putrefaction or decomposition. But for this the organism, by virtue of the digestive organs, is equipped with particular conditions for this to be carried out artificially. In addition to boiling, people have discovered frying from the promotion of the process of killing or destruction of the A life units. This method of destruction is not to be recommended. True, it promotes the killing of the A-life units, but it also to a great extent converts their corpses to charred substances or ash, a process that is most unfortunate for the organism since this is created only for the promotion of the organic corpse substance and not for the treatment of ash. All frying will therefore be avoided in the households of the future. It is a different matter with boiling. It does not convert products to charcoal or ash but only liberates the organism from the process of killing the A-life units. It will therefore be retained as long as people are still obliged to use coarse vegetarian products where the B-life units are encapsulated in the A-life units. This does not, of course, alter the fact that there are people today whose organisms are of such a robust nature that they themselves can carry out the process of killing and so, for a time, can still make boiling superfluous, and eat the products as raw food. But from a moral point of view nothing is gained, since the A-life units that are not killed by boiling or any other artificial method have all the same to be killed by the organism before the B-life units, which are the true nourishment, can be released. Moreover, it is also a fact that the organism is evolving towards becoming more and more refined. We see that the primitive human being can eat raw meat and coarse roots, and can to a far greater extent eat raw products than the refined, civilized human being. If the latter being therefore went from eating the products in a cooked state to eating them in a raw state, it would be, at any rate in the case of the coarsest and most indigestible plant products, a step backwards. But fortunately, evolution does not go backwards. It goes in the direction of the refinement of the organism and thereby makes it less and less suitable to carry out the killing process itself, at the same time as it to a corresponding extent leads forward to the pure fruit flesh, which, as previously mentioned, constitutes the highest ideal raw food for the human being. Chapter 30 Why pure fruit flesh will be the food of the future human being. With this we have come through the most important principal analyses of the terrestrial human being's nourishment. These analyses have shown us that the ideal food, or the food that is most in harmony with the highest and moral laws and the new view of the world, is that which consists of vegetarian products. Of these fruit flesh constitutes the highest, since its content of A-life units is extremely limited, the B-life units, for which it is vitally essential to be assimilated as nourishment in an organism, thereby preponderating to a corresponding degree. Pure fruit flesh as a means of nourishment will therefore be in contact with the observance of the great commandment of love, and will therefore exclusively become the food for the perfect being of love or the future human being. As the terrestrial human being has still not reached such a stage in evolution but still finds himself on the road towards this, he cannot yet live entirely on fruit flesh alone but must, as previously mentioned, eat such products as belong to the killing principle. But with ascending moral evolution or growing humaneness, the terrestrial human being moves more and more away from animal nourishment and moves, either consciously or unconsciously, towards the aforesaid highest food. This transition, however, cannot go in leaps and bounds, but only by the organism gradually getting used to the products we have described as the ideal food for the human being of today. Look up the symbol number 67A, to follow this explanation. The vibrations of the ideal food, the round figure in the uppermost corner to the left, signifies the human being as a life unit. The stair formation to the right signifies a section of the ladder of evolution of all living beings. The lowest step signifies the zone in evolution where the beasts of prey are. The next step signifies the zone to which the terrestrial human being at present belongs. And the following step symbolizes the area of the real human kingdom. On the lowest step to the right, one are the life units making up meat products, which are the food of the beasts of prey, is shown. The life unit on the next step constitutes one of the life units making up kernel, root and leaf products, which are the proper main source of nourishment for the terrestrial human being. The third life unit comes from fruit flesh, which is the highest food in the first zone of the real human kingdom. The dark area in the meat life unit constitutes that part of it that consists of a life unit, or the life units that are not suitable for assimilation as nourishment into an organism and for which this assimilation means death. These life units therefore resist this assimilation in a natural way. Their collected vibration, which is shown on the picture as a zigzag line, is therefore far too strong for the human organism, whose vibration is shown on the next step in the form of a dotted zigzag line. If one looks at the symbol for the life unit on the same step, one will see that the dark area here is relatively smaller than in the meat life unit. This means that the A life units are not nearly as numerous as the B life units. And as the process of killing, as a consequence of this, is not nearly as great as with the assimilation of these products into the organism, it is this that determines that it is more ethical, more in harmony with the law of existence for the progressive human being to use these products as food, just as the vibration from these, as shown in the picture, is much closer to the vibration of the human organism than the vibration of the meat life unit. On the next step, we see that the symbol for the fruit life unit does not have any dark area. This means that there are no A life units here. There is, however, a small percentage of B life units in the skin of the fruit that cannot be assimilated into the organism, but these are conducted undamaged and alive through it. All the remaining life units are assimilated alive into the organism and continue their natural development in it. There will therefore not be any particular unnatural resistance from these life units for the human organism to overcome. As this, however, through the force of habit involving meat and coarse vegetarian food, is trained to practice a far greater manifestation of power than is necessary for the assimilation of fruit flesh as nourishment, the vibration of this organism, as shown on the picture, is a little too strong for the fruit flesh, which is why it cannot as yet constitute the main source of nourishment for the terrestrial human being. On the picture, this is expressed by the fact that the zigzag line here is somewhat smaller than the zigzag line for the human vibration. From the symbol of the human being as a life unit in the upper left-hand corner, there are three dotted lines leading down, each to their own particular step. This symbolizes merely that the terrestrial human being's field of nutrition stretches from the meat life units, via the root, kernel and leaf products, to the pure fruit flesh. Of these, the lighter or milder forms of root, kernel and leaf products will therefore constitute the temporary ideal food for the terrestrial human being. Here a growing habituation to fruit flesh must be taken into account, which will exclusively become the ideal food for the perfect or completely evolved human being in the first zones of the real human kingdom, and thereby make him a divine aspirant to later and even higher zones, where this food will then again be replaced by a 100% air nutrition. The lungs will thus ultimately come to take over the entire process of nutrition, and the human being will then have left behind all the coarse physical forms of existence and have come into a zone where his organism will no longer have to obtain its nourishment from corpses through a process of putrefaction or decomposition, will not have to be a well of sewage or a means of conveyance for stinking excrement or waste products, but will be exclusively a manifestation of the fact that here to the great creating power of love has also overcome all difficulties or all the forms of trouble that today bind the human being to the primitive sphere of sickliness and illness. Chapter 31. Some hints to the beginner vegetarian to give instructions for combinations or compositions of vegetarian products or the preparation of vegetarian dishes lies, as previously mentioned, entirely outside my mission or task, since in this particular area there is now a whole literature with tables and chemical analyses written by capable experts. I would suggest only that the dishes be as simple as possible. Enjoy them preferably without strong spices and get entirely away from big dinners with many courses and all the superfluous alcoholic or poisonous drinks and sweet desserts. One or at most two vegetarian dishes and a single glass of water or fruit juice do not overexert the organism and promote the highest level of health and physical well-being. For the beginner vegetarian, healthy, fresh milk can also be recommended since it, like fruit flesh, contains mainly B life units. Do not, however, forget that the ideal food for the terrestrial human being mentioned here is not the final goal, but that evolution goes on and determines that coarse vegetable products must also gradually be left behind, just as the animal meat and blood products must now be left behind, and that the growth of love guides the human being forward to the maintaining of his existence through products for whose life units it means life to be assimilated as nourishment in an organism, and where no promotion of the killing principle can thereby be elicited. Chapter 32. Anesthetizing, intoxicating and stimulating substances cannot be proper food. Before I finish this book on the ideal food, I would just like to point out that there are also stimulating sources of nourishment made from vegetarian products that cannot in any way be rightfully regarded as food. To this category belong all strongly stimulating narcotic substances. That these cannot be regarded as proper sources of nourishment is due to the fact that they act with vibrations that are far too strong, vibrations that are far superior to the vibrations of the human organism, and therefore cause this organism to vibrate in time with them. As the effects of this appear in the form of stimulation, intoxication, anesthetization or loss of self-control and the complete physical and mental undermining of the individual, these stimulants can belong only to a primitive level of consciousness and cannot possibly belong to a zone where a real overshadowing by the Holy Spirit or a permanent experience of a glorified consciousness can take place. Chapter 33. When one is without love towards the microscopic beings that constitute the substance in our own organism, it now remains for me to say only that the purpose of this book has particularly been to show that in order to gain a completely happy fate, one must learn not only to love one's fellow beings and other visible and universally known species or forms of living being, but that one must also learn to practice the great commandment of love in our relation to those forms of life that, in the shape of substance, elude our physical sight and which constitute the microcosmos in our own organism. Only through this can we hope for a similar kindness or glorified existence from the great macrocosmic being in whose organism we ourselves are the microcosmos. So it has been my wish to give my readers an understanding of the fact that without the practicing of love towards our own organism's myriads of small, microscopic rightful inhabitants, there can be absolutely no perfect observance of the fifth commandment, absolutely no qualification for being a perfect instrument in the divine world plan, in the divine order of individuals, in the divine consciousness. And without this identity, the individual must still be a sick and imperfect being, bound to lower forms of existence, still satisfied with being a manifestation of a mere shadow of the existence whose mental sunlight he is in reality meant to be.